All right, buckle up, everybody. We're diving deep into the story of Joseph today.
One of my favorites.
Definitely a classic, right? We're going to be looking at excerpts from a lecture by Dr. Kenneth Matthews.
Yeah.
He really digs into Genesis chapters 39 through 41.
All right, Joseph in Egypt.
Exactly, Joseph in Egypt. Now, I'm sure most people listening are familiar with the broad strokes, you know, the betrayal, the slavery, the coat of many colors. But we're going deeper here.
Yeah.
We're going to unpack how Joseph navigates like some seriously tricky situations,
Right.
rises to power, and we're going to try to uncover the deeper theological threads that are kind of woven through this whole story.
It's an amazing story because it's not just some ancient adventure story, you know.
Right.
It really grapples with some pretty big questions
Yeah.
about human choices, divine involvement, and how those two things intertwine.
Yes. And you know, one of the things that I found really interesting that Dr. Matthews points out is this contrast
Okay.
between Joseph and his brother, Judah. Now, you think back to Genesis 38,
Yeah.
Judah's story takes a very dark turn with deception and,
Right.
well, let's just say some questionable choices.
Morally questionable choices.
Yeah. So, how do we see that contrast playing out?
Well, I think that contrast is crucial because what Dr. Matthews is doing is setting us up to see how these two brothers
Yeah.
from the same family ultimately made very different choices when they're faced with difficult circumstances.
Yeah.
It really raises the question, what leads one down a path of integrity and the other one down a path of, well, let's say moral compromise?
Interesting. So let's rewind a little bit
Sure.
just to kind of set the stage, especially if anyone needs a refresher. Joseph is sold into slavery by his brothers, right?
Right.
He's taken to Egypt
Yep.
and he's purchased by Potiphar, who is an official of Pharaoh. And this is where that descent motif that Dr. Matthews talks about starts to kind of unfold.
Yes, descent motif.
Yeah, what is that all about?
Well, the descent motif is this idea that Joseph finds himself in increasingly lower positions.
Okay.
First the pit, then Egypt as a slave, then prison.
Wow.
But it's not just a downward spiral.
Right.
It's almost like each descent is a step in a hidden staircase leading him upwards.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Because it's like he keeps getting knocked down, but he gets back up and he's somehow stronger and even closer to a position of influence.
Closer to where God wants him to be.
And throughout it all, we see that recurring phrase,
Yeah.
the Lord was with Joseph.
Constantly there.
It's like a mantra, isn't it?
It is.
Reminding us that even in those really dark moments, there's a greater force at work.
It is, and that phrase is so powerful because it's suggesting that Joseph's success isn't merely luck
Right.
or even his own doing.
Right.
It's directly attributed to divine presence and favor.
It's like God is intervening.
Yeah, and it makes you think about that balance, doesn't it, between divine providence,
Right.
God's plan, and human agency, Joseph's own choices and actions.
So is it all preordained, or does he have the free will to mess things up?
Well, that is the question, isn't it? I
Yeah.
mean, that's a question theologians have been grappling with for centuries.
Of course.
And this story doesn't give us, like, a simple answer,
Yeah.
but it certainly does make us think about how those two forces might be working together.
Absolutely. So we have this backdrop of divine presence, but then we also see Joseph's own character shining through.
Right.
And think about his response to Potiphar's wife.
Oh, yeah.
She tries to seduce him and he refuses.
He does.
And this is where the contrast with Judah becomes even more stark, I think.
Absolutely, because Joseph finds himself in a really vulnerable position, far from home.
Yeah.
He could easily justify giving in to temptation,
Right.
but he chooses to remain faithful to his values and, as he understands it, to God.
Yeah.
It's a real testament to his integrity.
Yeah. It really is. It makes you think, like, what allows someone to stay true to themselves when everyone else is cutting corners?
Right.
And, you know, it's not like things get easier for him. He gets
Yeah.
thrown in prison.
He does.
But even there, you see that theme, the Lord was with Joseph, continuing.
He's not abandoned.
And this is where we see another really fascinating element of the story emerge,
Okay.
which is Joseph's gift of dream interpretation.
Yes.
And it starts in prison
Right.
when he accurately interprets the dreams of the cupbearer and the baker.
Right, his fellow prisoners.
Now, we have to remember,
Yeah.
in the ancient world,
Especially in Egypt,
particularly in Egypt,
dreams were considered messages from the divine.
oh,
I mean, people really believed that they held significant meaning and that they could predict the future.
So it wasn't just like some parlor trick. It
Right.
was deeply spiritual.
Absolutely.
But what I find so interesting is that Joseph, he doesn't take credit for his ability.
No.
He very clearly states, do not interpretations belong to God?
That's right.
It's like he's saying, I'm just a vessel. This wisdom comes from a higher source.
Now, humility is so striking, isn't it?
It is.
He could easily boast about his abilities.
Right.
But instead, he points to God as the source.
Yes.
And I think it really underscores the idea that Joseph sees himself as an instrument of God's will.
And that kind of sets the stage then for a really pivotal moment in the story, which is Pharaoh's dreams.
Yes, Pharaoh's dreams.
So Pharaoh's having these vivid, disturbing dreams.
About cows.
About cows and grain.
And grain, yeah.
None of his wise men.
His advisors, the magicians.
They can figure it out.
They're stumped.
They are totally stumped. And this is where that cupbearer, who Joseph helped back in prison,
yes,
finally remembers him.
He says, wait a minute, I know a guy.
He's like, I know just the guy.
Yeah.
And so he suggests Joseph to Pharaoh.
Mm-hmm.
And Joseph is brought out of prison and literally given a makeover, fresh clothes, to stand before Pharaoh.
It's incredible, isn't it?
It's like foreshadowing.
It really is. It's foreshadowing this amazing elevation that's about to happen.
It's like, get ready. Things are about to change in a big way.
Big time.
Okay, so picture this. We've got Joseph, who's gone from the pit to prison, and now he's standing before Pharaoh, ready to interpret these super weird dreams.
Talk about a high-pressure situation, right?
Intense. So what happens next? What does he say?
Well, Joseph, yeah, again, says that it's not his own smarts doing this, but God's helping him to interpret.
Right.
And he tells Pharaoh that these dreams, they're predicting 7 years of abundance.
Oh, wow.
Followed by 7 years of really bad famine.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and he doesn't just, you know, stop at just interpreting the dreams.
Right.
He gives Pharaoh advice on how to prepare for the tough times ahead, like a whole strategic plan for stockpiling grain.
It's like, not only can he decode the dreams, but he's also got this incredible foresight and practical wisdom.
Right.
It's no wonder that Pharaoh is just, like, completely blown away.
Pharaoh recognizes that this isn't just some random dude who's good at figuring out dreams, you know.
Right.
He sees that Joseph has some amazing insight, some real leadership qualities.
Yeah.
And he's got this deep understanding of how to manage resources, you know,
yeah,
like how to run a country.
Right, right.
And what's so wild is that Pharaoh just hands over the fate of Egypt.
The entire country.
Yeah, to this guy who used to be a slave, this foreigner.
What a turnaround.
I know, it's crazy. It's like he goes from the absolute bottom rung of society to the top in like a blink of an eye.
I know. And this is where things get, I think, even more complicated, right? Because there's this massive famine sweeping across the land.
Uh-huh. It's devastating.
So bad that people from all over are traveling to Egypt to buy grain, including, wait for it, Joseph's brothers.
Talk about an awkward family reunion, right?
Can you imagine? Can you even imagine the tension?
They have no crew.
They're showing up in Egypt desperate for food. No idea that the guy in charge of the grain is the brother they betrayed all those years ago.
It's like something out of a movie.
Right. And Joseph, he recognizes them immediately, right?
Yeah.
But they don't recognize him.
Not at all.
Because he's gone through this crazy transformation, not just in his position, but his appearance too.
He looks totally different, dressed like an Egyptian official.
Speaking the language, probably with a whole entourage, right?
Totally.
Like, he's a world away from the boy they once knew.
It's mind-blowing.
So, okay, so what does Joseph do? Does he, like, immediately reveal himself?
No.
And, like, give them a piece of his mind?
He doesn't do that.
Oh, wow.
He's not out for revenge or to just, like, rub it in their faces, you know?
Right, right.
Instead, he decides to, like, test them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, see if they've changed. See if they're different people now.
What does he do?
Well, he accuses them of being spies.
Whoa.
Throws them in prison for 3 days.
Oh, my goodness.
And then he demands that they bring their youngest brother, Benjamin, back as proof that they're telling the truth.
Okay, I gotta admit, that's a little harsh, isn't it?
It seems that way, doesn't it?
To throw your own brothers in prison. Yeah.
I know, but I think it's important to remember the context here.
Okay.
Joseph's in a crazy, powerful position.
He is.
And these are the guys who basically condemned him to a life of slavery, so there's got to be some kind of reckoning.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But Dr. Matthews points out that this isn't about a personal vendetta for Joseph, you know?
Oh, right.
It's about something way bigger. It's about protecting his family.
Okay.
Fulfilling God's promise to his ancestors and showing how God works in mysterious ways.
So he's got this bigger plan. He's thinking long term.
Yeah, he's playing the long game here. It's all orchestrated for a bigger purpose.
Okay, so it's intense, but it's all part of this bigger plan. So how do the brothers react to all of this?
Well, can you imagine their fear?
Oh, yeah.
Confusion? They're facing starvation. Now they're being called spies and thrown in jail by this powerful Egyptian official.
Look, what's going on?
And then there's the demand to bring Benjamin to Egypt, which must have brought back so much guilt, considering what they did to Joseph.
They must have been like, oh, man, karma.
Right. But that demand to bring Benjamin.
Yeah.
It's a crucial test.
Okay.
Joseph's trying to see if they've changed, if they've learned anything from their past.
Right, right.
Are they still willing to sacrifice a brother for their own gain?
Wow.
Or will they actually protect him?
That's the moment of truth.
It is. Their true character is revealed.
Oh, what happens?
Well, here's where we see a glimmer of hope, especially with Judah.
Oh.
Remember, he's the one who suggested selling Joseph in the first place.
I know, yes.
But this time he's begging Joseph to spare Benjamin.
Wow. Really?
He even offers to take Benjamin's place as a slave.
Oh, my goodness.
It's like he's finally getting it.
Yeah.
Understanding the weight of what they did.
Uh-huh.
The importance of loyalty to family.
It's a huge change.
It is. A moment of redemption for Judah, really.
So after all these tests and this crazy situation, Joseph finally reveals himself, right?
It does.
Can you imagine that scene?
It's incredible. I mean, the book of Genesis describes it beautifully.
Yeah.
You know, Joseph's overwhelmed with emotion, starts crying, and embraces his brothers.
Oh, that's so sweet.
He forgives them for everything they did to him.
Wow, so powerful. So powerful.
It really shows the transformative power of forgiveness.
So is that it? Happy ending? Everyone goes home happy?
Well, it's definitely a turning point in the story.
Oh, okay.
But remember, there's still this huge famine going on.
Oh, right.
So what's going to happen?
Yeah, do they all just pack up and head back to Canaan?
Joseph, being the smart guy he is, invites a whole family to live in Egypt.
Really?
Yeah, where he can provide for them.
Oh, okay.
Because he knows Canaan's struggling and Egypt's got all those supplies.
Right, they're prepared.
Exactly.
That makes sense. But that's a huge decision, you know, to leave their homeland.
It was a massive transition for them. But Joseph assures them it's all part of God's plan.
That's right. He tells them, what you meant for evil, God meant for good.
Such a powerful statement.
That line gives me chills every time. It's just this amazing reminder that even when things seem so bleak, when people hurt us intentionally, God can work through those experiences to do something incredible.
Right. We can't always understand God's plan in the moment.
Yeah, it's way bigger than we can imagine.
Exactly.
So the family settles in Egypt, protected from the famine, and I guess we're left to think about what it all means.
I know, it's incredible, right?
Yeah, and this sets the stage for the Israelites being in Egypt for, like, generations to come.
It does, and it's all because of Joseph.
It's amazing how one man's life can shape the destiny of so many people.
It really is.
All right, welcome back to our deep dive into the story of Joseph. So we've been through a lot with him, betrayal, slavery, prison, that incredible rise to power. Now his family's safe and doing well in Egypt.
Yeah.
But there's still more to the story, right?
Oh, yeah. This isn't just a happy ending and everyone lives happily ever after kind of thing.
So what happens to Joseph? I mean, he's had this amazing life full of ups and downs. How does it all wrap up for him?
Well, according to Dr. Matthews, he lives a very long and successful life in Egypt. He stays as Pharaoh's, like, right-hand man.
Wow.
Helps to guide the nation through tough times. Make sure everything's stable.
He's like the ultimate advisor.
He is, but he doesn't just, you know, sit back and relax.
Right.
He's actively involved in shaping Egypt's future, you know.
It's like he's found this perfect balance.
Yeah.
Between his Hebrew heritage and his adopted Egyptian culture. He doesn't forget where he came from, but he's also embracing this new life, this new role.
And that tension between holding on to your own cultural identity while adapting to a new environment.
Yeah.
That's something so many people today can relate to, right?
Oh, totally. It makes you think about the choices immigrants have to make,
mm-hmm.
the challenges of fitting in, and how important it is to preserve their own culture.
Absolutely.
But, you know, before we go too far down that road, I want to circle back to Joseph's relationship with his father, Jacob.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, after all they went through, that reunion must have been incredible.
It's a beautiful moment of reconciliation and healing, for sure.
Jacob thought his son was dead.
Right, gone forever.
And now, here he is.
More powerful than he could have imagined.
And for Joseph, it's a chance to finally honor his father and take care of him.
Yeah, they must have had so much to talk about.
The stories, the forgiveness, I can only imagine.
And before Jacob dies, he gives a special blessing to Joseph's sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. He adopts them as his own.
Oh, wow. That's a big deal, right?
It is. It means they get a place among the 12 tribes of Israel.
Even though they were born in Egypt.
Exactly. So even though Joseph was sold into slavery and was away from his family for so long, his descendants are still seen as part of Jacob's lineage, part of that promise from God.
It's like that betrayal couldn't break the family bond or mess up God's plan in the end.
It really speaks to the idea that family is forever, that forgiveness can heal even the deepest wounds, and this whole theme of redemption that runs through the Bible.
Wow. So Joseph lives a long life, sees his family grow and prosper, but what about his own death? How does that happen?
Well, he dies at 110 years old.
Wow. That's a good long life.
That's a long life.
Yeah.
And the Egyptians, they embalm him, put him in a coffin, you know, showing how much they respected him.
Yeah, he really earned that respect.
He did. But there's this interesting detail. Before he dies, he makes his family promise to take his bones with them when they leave Egypt.
He knew they would leave eventually.
He was sure of it. He believed that God would bring his people back to the promised land.
So even in death, he's looking ahead. He never lost that faith.
Never. And generations later, when Moses leads the Israelites out of Egypt, they take Joseph's bones with them. They keep that promise.
Wow. That's powerful.
It is. It's this physical reminder of their ancestor, of his faith, and of how faithful God is to his promises.
I mean, that's incredible. They carry this symbol of hope through the wilderness.
A constant reminder of where they're going and who's guiding them.
Okay, so we've covered it all. Joseph's life, his struggles, his victories, his death. But what does it all mean? Why should we even care about this ancient story?
Well, that's the exciting part. This isn't just some dusty old tale. It's a story about forgiveness, resilience, and trusting in God's plan, even when you're totally confused.
It's like a guidebook for dealing with difficult people.
Right. I mean, think about how he handled those brothers.
Yeah.
He could have been bitter and angry.
Oh, yeah.
But he chose forgiveness and reconciliation.
And he went through so much.
Betrayal, slavery, prison.
But he never gave up hope.
Never. He kept trusting that somehow things would work out.
That's really inspiring. It makes you think, what would Joseph do if he was in our shoes today?
Right. How would he deal with conflict or disappointments or those moments where everything just seems to be falling apart?
It's like his story is telling us, hey, don't give up. Keep believing, even when things are tough. There's always a light at the end of the tunnel.
And that's a message everyone needs to hear, no matter who you are or what you believe.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up this deep dive, I'm just amazed at how one person's life can impact so many others. It makes me wonder about our own stories, our own journeys. Maybe we're all part of something much bigger than we can grasp.
It's a beautiful thought that our struggles, our victories, they all fit into some bigger plan.
Well said. And on that note, we'll leave you to think about the mysteries and lessons of Joseph's incredible life. We hope you've enjoyed this deep dive. And until next time, keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep diving deep.